"That you did," said Reuben, with the muscles of his jaw standing out. "It is unheard of, Jehoseph, what I have been ignorant of up till now. They sold you behind my back, and never gave me a hint. And all these years I did not know that they got rid of you and took money for you."
"That will do, Reuben," said Bilhah's Dan. "You did this and that behind our backs, too, and went secretly to the pit, meaning to steal the boy. As for the purchase price, it was no great sum, as Joseph's grace well knows. 20 shekels Phoenician, that was all, thanks to the old man's bargaining powers, and we can settle at any time, and you can get your due."
"Wrangle not, men," said Joseph. "Don't dispute about what one of you did without the other knowing, for God has put all right. I thank you, Reuben, my big brother, that you came to the pit with your rope to pull me out and give me back to the father. But I was not there, and that was good, for it was not to be so, and would not have been right. But now it is right. Now we must all of us think of nothing but the father."
"Yes, yes," nodded Naphtali, and his tongue went like a clapper, and his legs twitched. "What our exalted brother said is quite right, for it must not be that Jacob sits far away in his house of hair, or outside it, without the dimmest idea of what has happened here, that Joseph is alive, and has got high up in the world, and has a glittering post among the heathen. Only think, there he sits, Jacob, wrapped in ignorance that we stand here talking face to face with the lost one, and touch his garment to convince ourselves. Everything was misunderstanding and wrong information, and the father's high-flown lament is as naught, and as naught the worm that has gnawn us all our lives. All that is so thrilling, it is enough to make a man jump out of his skin. Everything in the world is so unbearably awry that we are here and know, and he does not know only because he is there, and great and foolish distances divide his knowledge from ours, so that the truth can only get a few paces ahead, and then lies still, and can no more. Oh, if I could just put my hands to my mouth, and shout across 17 days' distance, and say, 'Father, halloo, Joseph is alive, and he is as Pharaoh in the land of Egypt. That is the latest news.' But however loud one might shout, there he sits, unhearing and unmoved. Or if one could loose a dove whose wings had the speed of lightning, with a screed under its wing, 'Know all men by these presents,' that the awryness might be gone out of the world, and everybody here and there know the same thing. No, I can stay here no longer. I cannot stand it. Send me, send me. I will do it. I will run, defying the fleet stag, to give him good account. For could any account be better than that which tells the latest news?"
Joseph applauded his zeal, but he said, "Let well alone, Naphtali. Do not be precipitate, for you may not run off alone, and no one has a right to say to our father what I will have said to him, and what I planned to say long ago when I lay at night and mused on this story. You shall all stay with me 7 days, and share all my honors, and I will set you before my wife, the sun-maid, and my sons shall bow before you. After that, you shall load your animals and go up together with Benjamin, and tell him, 'Joseph, your son, is not dead, but lives, and speaks to you with his living voice, and says, God gave me rank among strangers, and folk I know not are subject to me. Come down here to me. Delay not, nor fear, dear father. Fear not the land of tombs, whither Abram too came in time of famine. As for the scarcity, and that for 2 years now there is no ploughing nor harvest in the world, that will certainly go on either 3 or 5 years more. But I will look out for you, and you shall settle here in rich pasture. If you ask me whether Pharaoh permits it, I answer you, him your son twists round his finger. And if his majesty desire that you should settle in the land of Goshen, and on the plains of Zoan, towards Arabia, I will see to it. You and your children and your children's children, your flocks and herds and fowl and all that is yours. For the land of Goshen, also called Gosem or Gosen, is the place I had long since chosen for you when you should be sent for, because it is not yet quite Egypt, not quite so Egyptian,
and you could live there on the fish of the delta and the fat of the land, and you need not have much to do with the children of Egypt. And their old man cleverness and your own native ways need not clash, and you would be near to me. You must speak so to my father in my name, and do it cleverly and skillfully to bring it home to him in his rigid old age, first that I am alive, and then that you are all to come down here. Oh, if I could only go up with you all and coax him into it, I certainly would. But I cannot. I cannot get away for a day. So you must do it for me, very lovingly and with great guile, and break these things to him about my being alive and his coming down. Don't say to him all at once, Joseph is alive. Begin by asking, suppose it were true that Joseph had not died, how would our Lord and Father feel? So he could come on to it gradually. And then, do not blurt out that you are all to come down and settle down below in the land of the corpse gods. Say, in the neighborhood of Goshen. Can you do it like that without me, sly and loving at once? In these next days, we can talk about how it should be done. Now I will show you my wife, the sun maid, and my boys, Manasseh and Ephraim, and we shall eat and drink, all 12 of us together, and be merry, and recall old times, yet forgetting much. But while I think of it, when you get home to our father, tell him all that you have seen, and stint not your description of my glory here below, for his heart has been sorely bruised, and it must be healed by the sweet music of his son's magnificence. Pharaoh writes to Joseph. It would be a pity if now, having heard all these things, our audience were to disperse, or to turn away its ears, thinking, well, that was that. The great revelation has been made, the climax reached, nothing better can be coming. There is only the end of the tale, and we know how it turned out already. We cannot get excited. Take my word for it, you are wrong. The author of this tale, by whom I mean him who has made all tales, has given it many climaxes, and he knows how to get its effects one through the other. With him, it is always the best is still to come. He always gives us something to look forward to. That was a lovely place where Joseph heard that his father was alive. But where Jacob, the old man, rigid with suffering in body and brain, slowly opens his senses to the song of spring and resurrection, and girds himself to go down and embrace his living son, there is nothing thrilling in that? Some who still stay to listen might tell the others how thrilling it was. Then they will be sorry all their lives for not having been there when Jacob blessed his Egyptian grandchildren with his hands crossed, and when the venerable man encountered his last hour. We know already, but that is a foolish thought. Anybody can know the story. To have been there is the thing. But it seems the injunction was needless. Nobody has stirred. So then, when Joseph had thus spoken with the 11, they went out thence together from where he had revealed himself to Asenath, the maiden, his wife, to bow before her. And they saw their nephews, Manasseh and Ephraim, with the Egyptian youth-lock on their heads. Through the whole great house there was a bustling and much joyous laughter, for all the household staff had listened at the doors, and Joseph needed to make no announcement. No, for everybody knew. And one shouted to another that the provider's brothers were come, and the sons of his father had found their way hither from Zahai land. It was the greatest fun for them all, especially because they could count on cakes and ale being given out to celebrate the event. But the scribes from the office had also listened and spread the news throughout the city, and it would have rejoiced the nimble Naphtali's heart to see it run like a forest fire throughout all Memphis, so that everybody was quickly on an equal footing of knowledge. They all knew something at the same time, that the troop of brothers of Pharaoh's universal friend had arrived at his house. There was much jumping for joy in the streets, and a crowd in front of Joseph's house in the best suburb of Memphis, shouting hurrahs and demanding the sight of him surrounded by his Asiatic kin. They were finally gratified. The 12 showed themselves on the terrace. What a pity Menfe's folk knew not how to manipulate light rays as we do, so that the group could be perpetuated in a photograph. They were satisfied with their own natural lenses, and did not miss anything because they could not even conceive of such an idea. The titillating news did not long stop within the walls of the metropolis of tombs. It flew like a dove out into the land, and first to get wind of it was Pharaoh, who, and his whole court with him, was, of course, greatly delighted. Pharaoh was now called Ikhnaton, having laid aside the harsh Amun name and assumed one which contained that of his father in heaven. Some years before, he had moved nearer to the city of his minister and favorite. He had ceased to reside in Thebes, the house of Amun-Re, and gone down further north into the upper Egyptian Hare district. There, after long search, he had found a spot suitable for the erection of a new city entirely dedicated to his beloved deity. The site was a little south of Khnunu, the house of Thot, at a place where a little island rose from the stream that simply cried out for the erection of elegant little pleasure pavilions. The rocks on the left bank retreated in a curve, affording space for laying out temples, palaces, and terraces, adequate to a thinker on God who had a hard time in life and ought also to have an easy one. The Lord of the Sweet Breath had found a place after his own heart, needing no counsel save his own thoughts and him who dwelt therein, to whom alone in this sweet spot the songs of praise should swell. The gracious command of his majesty went forth to his artists and stonemasons to build here with the greatest speed a city, the city of his father, the city of the horizon, Akhetaton. It was a severe blow for Noet-Amun, hundred-gated Thebes, for with the departure of the court it ran the risk of sinking to the level of a provincial city. Moreover, the move boldly served notice on the god of the empire at Karnak, with whose domineering priesthood Pharaoh's tender enthusiasm for the beloved All-in-One had during the fat years come into ever-increasing conflict. Pharaoh's delicate constitution could not stand these recurrent bouts with the might of the warlike national god, armed in the full panoply of tradition. He suffered more and more from the contradiction between the placability of his own soul and the necessity of doing offensive battle for his own higher god concept. To flee from this necessity was fortunately also the means of doing the enemy the most harm. Thus he resolved, for his own consecrated person, to shake Wayse's dust from off his sandals, even though his little mama, partly for the sake of keeping watch of Amun, partly out of loyalty towards the residence of King Neb-Mare, her deceased husband, might stop behind in her old palace. For 2 years, Ikhnaton had had to control his impatience to escape from Amun's jurisdiction, for it took that long to build the city, despite ruthless drafting of flogged slave labor. And even when the king shifted thither with great pomp and ceremony and offerings of bread and beer, of horned and hornless cattle, fowl, birds, wine, incense, and all fine herbs, it was as yet no city, only an improvised residence of half-finished luxury, consisting of a palace for him and the great consort Nefer-Nefruaton Nefertiti and the royal princesses, wherein they might sleep, but not properly live, because painters and decorators were still everywhere at work. There was further a temple for God the Lord, very bright and gay and flower-scented, with floating and flapping red streamers, with 7 courts, splendid pylons, and magnificent pillared halls, and simply marvelous parks and ingenious sheltered nooks, artificial ponds, trees and shrubbery transplanted into the desert in clumps of earth from their habitat in the fertile region of the Nile. White quays shimmered along the shore, and there were 12 brand-new dwelling-houses for the Aton-worshipping royal retinue, as well as a whole row of conveniently placed rock tombs in the surrounding hills. Of the whole, these were the most nearly ready for occupation. This, for the moment, was all there was of Akhetaton, but it was expected that the court would quickly draw hither in its train a growing population, and the embellishment of the city would go zealously on, since Pharaoh was already there on his throne, serving his father in heaven, holding feasts of tribute, and getting daughters to enlarge the state of his women's quarters. The third, Ankh-Senpa-Aton, had already arrived. Joseph had sent a special messenger to make formal announcement to the god of the arrival of his brothers, from whom he had been separated since early youth. But even before the messenger reached the new-smelling palace, the news had spread thither by word of mouth and been much and excitedly discussed by Pharaoh, his queen Nefertiti, her sister Nezimut, his own sister Bakhet-Aton, and his courtiers and staff of artists. He answered the letter straightway. It was superscribed, "Command to the administrator of that which the heavens give, actual overseer of operations, vice-spender of the king, and his universal friend, my uncle. Know that my majesty regards your letter as one which he reads with sincere joy. Lo, Pharaoh has shed many joyful tears over the news which he has received from you. The great consort, Nefer-Nefru-Aton, also the sweet princesses Bakhet-Aton and Nezimut, have mingled their tears with those of the beloved son of my father in heaven. All that you tell me is extraordinarily splendid, and what you announce makes my heart to leap up. As for what you write, that your brothers have come to you and your father is still alive, at this news the heavens are joyful, the earth exults, and the hearts of good men frolic, while even those of evil folk are doubtless softened thereby. Know herewith that the lovely child of Aton, Nefer-Kheperu-Re, lord of the two lands, in consequence of your letter, finds himself in extraordinarily gracious mood. The wishes which you link with your enclosures were granted beforehand, even before you set them down. It is my beautiful will, and I give my gracious consent, that all of yours, however many, should come to Egypt, where you are as myself, and you may allot them room wherein to settle, according to your best opinion, whose richness shall nourish them. Say to your brothers, thus shall you do, and thus Pharaoh commands, in whose heart is the love of his father Aton. Lade your beasts and take wagons with you out of the stores of the king for your little ones and your wives and your father, and come. Look not to your household goods, for you shall be provided in the land with all that you need. Pharaoh knows indeed that your culture does not stand very high, and your wants are easy to satisfy. And when you come into your land, take your father and his people and his whole house, and bring them down to me, that you graze near your brother, the steward of the whole land, for the land shall lie open to you. Thus far the direction of Pharaoh to your brothers, given amid tears. Did not many and important affairs keep me at Akhetaton, the only capital of the lands, my residential city, I would mount my great car made of electrum, and hasten to Men-Nefru-Mire, that I might see you among your brothers, and you would set your brothers before me. But when they are returned, you must bring some of them before me, not all of them, for that would be too fatiguing for Pharaoh, but a chosen group, that I may question them. And also the old man, your father, shall you bring before me, that I may show him favor by my words, and he shall live in honor, for that Pharaoh has spoken with him. Farewell.